grab some popcorn and a favorite chair. The love of movies is why we're here. Press play and don't delay. Let Phil be our guide to a cinematic day. Phil at the movies, from the silver screen to his podcast stream. Phil's covering every movie dream. Phil at the movies.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Phil at the Movies. I'm, of course, your host, Phil, and you are listening to show number 189 of this ongoing podcast that is, you guessed it, For the Love of Movies. And a quick disclaimer to put out at the top of today's episode, I am not recording this on my usual setup. It's actually being done on the iPhone. So if it sounds a little funky, that is the reason why. The joys of technology, can't live with it, can't live without it, but wanted to put that out there before the episode really gets going today, because as you probably saw in the header, this is a triple feature show. I am going to be sharing my thoughts on Begonia, Frankenstein, and Die, My Love. Three new films. Begonia opened nationwide last week on Halloween. Frankenstein had a limited theatrical release over the last couple weeks and is now streaming on Netflix. And Die, My Love opens nationwide today. But before I get into my thoughts, because yes, I have a lot to say about all three of these movies, let me start by saying first, thank you. Thank you to you, the friends, you, the listeners of this show. First off, last week's show was the Halloween movie ranking episode. And for over 4 hours and change, myself, Anthony, and Chris ranked all 13 films in the Halloween franchise. And I want to thank all of you who have taken the time to watch this Herculean episode and stuck with it, because it was a marathon, not a sprint, but couldn't have had it any other way, especially talking about Halloween and Michael Myers. But in addition to that, it was fitting that with the release of that episode, this show had a mini milestone, and I'm not going to pop champagne or anything over it, but I wanted to just share that as of last week's episode, we have now had over 10,000 downloads on this show. And I am just overwhelmed and so appreciative to you, the friends. I mean that. You who listen to the show, whether you listen to it on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, or if you watch or listen on YouTube, none of this would be possible without your support, your friendship, your love of movies. And so I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that. I mean, we're coming up on almost 4 years. I've been doing this for almost 4 years and nearly 200 episodes, 10,000 plus downloads, and none of it would be possible without all of you taking part in this cinematic journey with me. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for loving movies. Thank you for checking out this show. For the love of movies, onward and upward we go. And another shout out and thanks to Chris and Anthony for their help in last week's episode. I couldn't have done it without them, and I couldn't think of two better people to take that trip into Haddonfield, Illinois, and talk about Michael Myers and the series. So thank you guys publicly. I wanted to say that here and now, for making last week's episode possible, and also to give their shows a shout out, Gathering of the Geeks and Tis the Podcast. Give a like, give a follow, give a listen. They put out great stuff each and every week with their respective shows. But now, on to the main event. As I said, a triple feature, three films to talk with you about today: Begonia, Frankenstein, and Die, My Love. So I'll begin with Begonia, This is the latest film from Yorgos Lanthimos, starring Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons. And this is actually the second time that I have seen this film. I first saw it back in September at the Telluride by the Sea Film Festival and fell in love with it the first time I saw it. And I want to make a point, because sometimes when you see a film a second time, it doesn't always land like that first experience. There is, of course, the rare instance where you may have hated a film the first time, but then grew to appreciate it more on a second viewing. I've had that happen a number of times in the past. Joker Folie à Deux is not one of them, but we'll put that aside. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you have that first initial experience with a movie, and no matter how hard you try to chase that high, you never can achieve it again. And so I was a little curious going into this film, because I had just revisited, actually a few days prior, a film that I saw earlier this summer, Weapons, which I absolutely loved the first time I saw it and was blown away by the entire thing, was running around saying, oh my God, this is the horror movie of the year. And I revisited a couple days, actually, right before I saw Begonia. And I have to say, I still enjoyed the film. I think Amy Madden is the real standout performance from that movie. Her as Aunt Gladys is just such a tour de force. But the film did not reach the levels that it did for me that first time. I enjoyed it. I still think it is a good movie, but it's an imperfect movie. And I definitely left not as excited or confident in it as I had the first time. So I sort of had that in the back of my mind going into Begonia, thinking, oh, is this going to be one of those cases again? But I am happy to report that was not the case with Begonia. Lightning did, in fact, strike twice. And frankly, when it comes to Yorgos, his films tend to have that effect. And without question, Begonia is my favorite, no pun intended, movie by this director. I just adore what he did here. And his films tend to be these wonderfully weird, almost fever dream type movies, and yet still have a topically relevant point to make. And I think of a film like Poor Things from a few years ago, which also starred Emma Stone, and she, of course, won an Oscar for it. That is such a wonderful and weird and exaggerated story, and larger than life. It still has a beautiful point to make, and there's a wonderful humanity to it, but it is not the most accessible film. This movie, despite all of its sort of conspiracy trappings and questions of are we alone and the role of humanity and nature, all of that aside, this film to me felt to be the most accessible of all the films he has done. And I think partly because even though it is dealing and tackling relevant and sensitive and large topics, it is all wrapped in the cloak of a black comedy with two incredible powerhouse performances that, yes, I'll just say it should be in the conversation when we get to Oscar season and award season early next year, full stop. Now, on to the film itself. And I'm not going to give too many spoilers, because this is one of those films where I really would encourage you to see it for yourself. The trailer, the teasers give you just of enough of a tease to know what you're getting into. But the movie, it locks you in from the first frame, and it goes pedal to the metal all the way to the end in quite a bubble bursting manner, shall we say. But enough of that, on to the plot of it. A paranoid and delusional prepper, doomsday scroller, conspiracy hive, disenfranchised young man named Teddy, played by Clemens is beyond convinced that this big pharma CEO, Michelle Fuller, played by Emma Stone, is more than a corporate masochist, but is actually an undercover alien. Teaming with his cousin Don, played by Aidan Delbus, they kidnap Fuller in an elaborate scheme and demand to be taken aboard her mothership on the night of the lunar eclipse. What follows is a battle of the wills and ideologies with an ending that is both gobsmacking and pointedly poignant. Now, the plot of believing Michelle Fuller to be this secret undercover undercover alien living amongst the human race, masquerading as a human, if you will, put that all aside. Yorgos has broken ground in this film and taken us down the conspiracy rabbit hole into a world that sadly looks more fact than fiction. And what I mean by that is the way the world of Teddy is constructed in this film, it's like pages you see ripped from the headlines. And in fact, that there are people like Teddy and Don in real life, people born on the other side of the track, broken and abused by a system or other factors, and then who then attach themselves to these rancid ideas and ideologies, all to try and feel something and try to find their place in a world that seems to be looking the other way instead of looking at them. It is raw and unforgiving, and yet Yorgos is able to deliver it all, as I said, in a black comedy. And the film sort of pokes fun at this upside-down world while at the same time proving that truth can, in fact, be stranger than fiction. And there's this facet to Teddy where he is this one man against the world, and it's kind of a tragedy in a lot of ways where nobody is taking him seriously, nobody is even responding to him, but he has become wholly convinced that Michelle Fuller is an alien. He's done his, quote, research, if you will. He has developed this web of conspiracies. It's like the meme come to life with the corkboard and all of the strings running around to the different conspiracy points. This is literally Jesse Plemons' character in the film. He is convinced 100% that Fuller is an alien, and he is determined to be the savior of the human race by negotiating some sort of exodus by the aliens from Earth. It is an unhinged performance, and yet it is an utterly tragic performance because there is not a level of sort of eye twitching, oh, this guy is off his rocker, don't take him seriously. I mean, he is off his rocker, but there's a tragedy to him because he is completely convinced and completely convinced in his convictions that it's really both devastating and powerful to watch all at once. And Plemons just takes us into this world and he doesn't let go. I mean, everything from the way his character looks, to his mannerisms, to his tics, and just minute details, it's like something or someone that would have been ripped from the pages of the headlines, like someone we would see in our real world, which is both sort of illuminating and sad at the same time. And I mean, dear God, does he go toe-to-toe with Emma Stone, who is a powerhouse in his own right. But Plemons continues to remind us why he is one of the up-and-coming actors of his generation and someone not to ignore whenever he is on screen. And he really, in many ways, he is the focal point of this film because he is driving this entire narrative. He is driving this entire conspiracy and trying to bring it to fruition, if you will. And it's just dazzling to watch Plemons work and work the scenery, but never overdo it in a way. I mean, that's the real takeaway from this film. Even though it is so absurd and over the top at points, it is grounded in a way where it feels plausible. It feels like it is something you could actually imagine happening in the real world. Like I said, there are people like Teddy who just go down these rabbit holes of conspiracies and never actually come back out to see daylight. It's really unnerving and unsettling, and it just kind of adds to the overall tragic humanity of this story. Now on to Emma Stone, the force of nature that is Emma Stone. She creates the modern CEO in this movie, devoid of emotion, unflinching, driven by talking points and briefing memos. And really, she plays two characters in this film. She plays the barely human CEO, Michelle Fuller, and then she plays the hostage slash presumed to be an alien. And there is a distinction, and it's a wonderful way to watch her work. And it's a performance where it's layered in subtle eye twitches and smirks that just leaves us in awe of her perfected power. I mean, there's a reason why she has two Oscars by her name. And frankly, if I had it my way, I would give her an award for this film. It is incredible to watch her just evolve and devolve at the same way. And it's easy to see how in the wrong hands someone could have really played this character over the top and hammy. And Stone doesn't do that. She manages to find that even keel where, yes, the whole thing is absurd and over the top, but yet she, like Plemons, is able to ground us and ground the character in a way where it is completely convincing, and you are just shocked by the multitude of twists and turns that envelop as the story goes further and further down into this den of madness where, as I said at the top, there is this glimmer of truth being stranger than fiction. But it's a madcap energy of a movie. I mean, it's a black comedy, and at the same time, it's a cautionary tale rolled into one. And to the title of the film, Begonia, that stems back to a belief by the ancient Greeks that bees, which have a vital role in the source of the earth's livelihood and stability, the belief was that the bees could be regenerated from the carcasses of dead animals, namely cows. And keep that in mind when you are watching the film, because again, there's a lot of subtext and sort of layers within layers to this film that kind of never is highbrow, but there's sort of that kind of subtlety that really drives the film's point and ultimate conclusion home, where you're just sort of at the end of it, oh my God, you're gobsmacked by what you have in fact watched. And there's, again, a lot of interesting points being made with the destruction of the natural the natural resources in the world around us, sort of humanity and nature coexisting, or can they coexist? There's a subplot, or not necessarily a subplot per se, but an added element where Fuller's company may or may not have been responsible for the destruction of bee colonies. Again, all of that sort of playing into this cautionary tale of how if we as humans are not too careful, nature will inevitably fight back. And we sort of realize or fail to realize that we are just a tiny blip in this large cosmic universe. Now, having seen the film twice, I was both tickled and unnerved by the film. And I loved watching it a second time because it was really like watching it for the first time again. Again, I saw different sides and details and nuances that I wasn't keenly aware of the first time. And it just added to the overall viewing pleasure of this movie, while also seeing a lot of the subtext and additional elements that Yorgos has sort of peppered in throughout the entire movie, where, yeah, you can watch this as just a straightforward black comedy, an absurdist tale. You can watch it as an examination on the conspiracy mind that we are reckoning with in our society today. You can watch it as a story of, are we alone? Are we alone in the universe? And you can also watch it as a cautionary tale about the role of humanity in this natural world, and where exactly does our place lie, and can we keep going on consuming and destroying our national or our natural resources without there being some blowback or consequences. Just a movie within a movie in a lot of ways that ultimately delivers quite a gut punch at the end, where it is both jarring and shocking, but yet, as I said, it's pointedly poignant. And I think that's where it goes back to this really being a cautionary tale, where you leave this film both amused and pleased by what you've watched, but also at the same time thinking, oh my God, what did I just watch? And wow, that's a lot to unpack. It's a movie where I know again and again I am going to be revisiting this film and just probably even enjoying it even more on successive viewings. But Yorgos, he has done it again. And not only is this, I think, his best film to date, it certainly is my favorite of his to date, but it is one of the best films of this year, and a movie that feels of the moment. There is so much going on in this movie where, like I said, it feels like it's ripped from the pages of headlines that we see either in the newspapers, on our TV screens, or on our phones. It feels like something that is a real reflection point of where we are now. And Yorgos does it with deft comedy and just sheer madcap brilliance, all tied together with fantastic and powerhouse performances that just leave us in awe and at the same time cheering. Give them all the awards come Oscar season. And I apologize, everybody. This has already gone on longer than I initially intended. I promise this will not be a repeat of the Halloween episode. I will get you out of here in under an hour. But that's, again, what happens once I start talking about a movie that resonates with me and I just am jazzed about. I can't stop talking about it. I probably should have brought a filter or duct tape to put over my mouth. But, you know, such is life. And this next film, frankly, and yes, it is Frankenstein, is going to be worthy of a future episode and full-length discussion, because there is so much to marvel at with this film. I will not be doing it justice in this brief review, but I just want to give you my first initial thoughts. And right off the top, I will say Frankenstein by Guillermo del Toro is a gothic horror masterpiece. Frankenstein was written in 1818. The story has been told and retold countless times. Movies and television, the image of Boris Karloff as the creature is synonymous with the idea of Frankenstein. People dress up as the monster for Halloween. Hell, the Munsters TV series, no less. Frankenstein, the story of the doctor who creates life, is such a staple in storytelling that it has been told and retold time and time again. So the question to ask at the start is, 207 years later, is there anything left to say on Frankenstein? The answer is, frankly, yes. And we have Guillermo del Toro to thank for it. He is able, with this film, which is in many ways more than a movie, this is a passion project. He wanted to tell this story. He wanted to bring his version of Frankenstein to life for decades. And finally, all of the stars aligned for this film to happen. This is more than a movie. This is an artist pouring his heart and soul into a creation to leave his signature next to this historic and, frankly, incredible gothic tale. Not since, well, frankly, no, I will say it. Del Toro has given us the definitive take of Frankenstein as it was conceived in the story by Mary Shelley. This rendition of Frankenstein is a Gothic horror triumph. It is a painting come to life. It is artistry unmatched. It is a story that resonates with us because even though it is 207 years old, we are still wrestling with those questions and ideas that even Mary Shelley was wrestling with back in 1818. The idea of creating life, the idea of playing God, the idea of tempting fate, this mad scientist creation, all of it. When we look at AI, these are the same sort of ideas and themes existing in Frankenstein. And I love how this movie really taps into that idea of only monsters play God. And that's where the heart of this story lies. It is an examination of two souls. One of nature, one of man, if you will, and one man-made. And interestingly enough, it is the manufactured soul that is more authentic and real than the so-called human soul. This is an incredible examination, a study, if you will, a character study of both Victor Frankenstein, played by Oscar Isaac, and his creation, the creature, played by Jacob Elordi. And through their parallel stories, we see that it is the monster, the creature, that is more human, more real than the human being who created him. The fact that we are able to feel sympathy, the fact that we're able to feel a flood of emotions, just speaks to the raw authenticity that exists in this film. This is not just a cash grab. You know, yes, it's a movie, this is a business, but Del Toro is an artist, and he is creating a work of art with this film. Every minute detail, from the music to the cinematography to the production design, the movie has a scope and scale of a time in Hollywood that is frankly long since passed. This feels like one of those big budget gothic tales that is sweeping in its score and setting. The fact that it takes us back to the time period, if you will, the time in which Frankenstein was created, only adds to the authenticity of this film. This is not a modern day retelling. This is not an updated version. This is not a grim and gritty reboot. This is Frankenstein as it was meant to be told, steeped in Gothic romanticism. It is a story that gets to the very heart of what it means to be human. And the fact that it is the creature, this creation, that is existing and exhibiting more humanity than the human being who created him. Oh, it's just dazzling. And it is devastating at the same time. Oscar Isaac creates his own Victor Frankenstein here. He certainly pays tribute to the many storied performances before. You look at Colin Clive from the Universal movies, or even Peter Cushing in the Hammer horror films. But Isaac is doing his own thing. And he's really showing us Victor Frankenstein as the obsessive and also the possessed, the person consumed by this desire to not only make something for himself and of himself, but to get out from under the shadow of his father, to do what his father could not do. And I love the framing of this film where he loses his mother, the one source of humanity in his life. And he spends his entire life trying to recapture that humanity, trying to recreate it, which ultimately leads to him building this monster. Oh, it's frightening And it is marvelous at the same time because it shows the lengths people will go to try and better themselves, the ways they will go to try and chase a dream, even though it will have disastrous ends. This is the classic age-old cautionary tale of what happens when you play with fire. You are going to get burned. And does Victor get burned? And even though we hate Victor at times, and he's contemptible, Isaac is still able to show us a man conflicted with himself and the world, and frankly is lost in a world of his own creation. It's a gobsmacking performance, and I applaud Isaac tenfold for what he was able to do with Victor Frankenstein. He's not only able to give us a mad scientist, but also one who is worthy, if you will, of our sympathy. Now, on the other hand, you have the creature played by Jacob Elordi. And for those of you who are just learning and realizing that Jacob Elordi can act, I mean, welcome to the club, because I have been impressed with his career for a long time. But he really came into his own for me when he did Priscilla, where he played Elvis Presley. So I knew the guy could act, and I knew this was going to be an interesting performance. Originally, it was supposed to be Andrew Garfield, but he had to drop out, I believe, due to scheduling conflicts. Elordi has done the best job playing the creature, the monster, whatever you want to call it, since Boris Karloff. Never before, not since Karloff, has there been such a humanistic approach to this creation. And underneath all of the makeup and prosthetics, Elordi is able to give us this tortured soul that is man-made. And you never forget that in this movie. And certainly the creature constantly reminds us, or reminds Victor, that he is this manufactured creation. But yet we see through his interactions, through his journey, through his birth, if you will, his coming of age, he has more humanity than many of the characters in the film. And that's what makes this so utterly tragic. A creature that cannot die. A creature that is possessed to live again and again. All because of a madman's twisted dream. Oh, sheer poetry. Sheer poetry. And Elordi is able to do something with the monster that I did not think was possible. He is both frightening and he is sympathetic. Because at this point, the Frankenstein monster, I don't want to say it's become a joke, but it is so steeped in our pop culture minds that you kind of can't look at it without thinking, oh, it's just, you know, it's the monster, or you know, it's Frankenstein. You know, people just sort of brush it off. So the fact that he was able to breathe new life into this character, to make it his own, it's just a marvelous job. And I will just say it, he should be in the conversation when award season happens. Absolutely. Because what he does in this film, again, under the guise of makeup and prosthetics, the fact that he's able to elicit and project such humanity and emotion, it is an incredible, incredible ride. And it's one of my favorite films of the year. And as I said, not since Karloff has there been such a humanity to this otherwise inhuman creation. Now, I could go on at great detail. I'm going to stop myself because this is, again, just more of a tease, if you will. Frankenstein is a masterpiece. And I know that's, again, a word that gets thrown around a lot, but it really does feel appropriate when talking about this film. It's art. It is a work of art. Del Toro poured his heart and soul into this film. The cast and crew poured their heart and soul in this film, whether from the cinematography to the production design, the score, the acting, just the overall vibe of this movie. It is majestic to watch. And you just sort of take it in, and you're left in awe by the film. I mean, there are moments where I sort of jumped because there are, you know, this is a horror story after all. But largely, I was just so affected by the humanity of it, just the raw emotion. It's what you would expect from a gothic tale. And this is going to make a wonderful companion piece with last year's Nosferatu. I love that we're seeing a resurgence of gothic horror. And Del Toro does what he does best, which is to give us these monsters, which, you know, otherwise should be frightening, and yet is able to breathe a humanity into them where they are truly relatable, tragic characters that you just feel for the moment they step on the screen. He has done it again. This could arguably be his magnum opus. I mean, it's that phenomenal. Again, I'm really trying to pick my adjectives here because there's just so much that could be said about this film. I'll just leave it as no notes, chef's kiss, well done. And that brings me to the final film of this triple feature, and it is the film that I am most conflicted on. The movie Die, My Love, directed by Lynn Ramsey, stars Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. Now, I've been looking forward to this film a great deal, partially because I'm a big fan of Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. But the film itself has had a very unique marketing campaign where it really doesn't tell you much going into the film. And I went into the movie pretty much blind, other than knowing the basic premise of a young couple, Grace and Jackson, move into the country from New York. And after having a baby, Jennifer Lawrence's character begins to slowly unravel and lose her grip on sanity and begins a downward spiral into madness. And that is pretty much what the film ends up being. Performance-wise, Jennifer Lawrence proves again, not that she even needed to, but it's just nice to be to have that reminder of why she is one of the greats, if not the greatest actor of her generation. She is phenomenal in this movie. It is a magnetic performance that really rises above even the overall story and execution. And she's doing a lot. She's funny when she needs to be. She's sympathetic when the moment calls. She's unnerving and at times even scary. It's a volatile performance, and Lawrence is firing on all cylinders with this film. And again, not to, you know, put the Oscar cart before the horse, but I could certainly see her being nominated, to say the least, because this is one of those performances where even if you are mixed on the overall film, the performance stays with you. And Jennifer Lawrence as Grace and her downward spiral, her depression, her anxiety, her isolation, all of that is going to stay with me for a while. It is that much of an arresting performance. But the movie itself is where I'm conflicted, because on the one hand, the film tells a story that I think deserves to be told, and it's not one that necessarily is going to resonate with all audiences, but I think there is something there to it. This is not just, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, getting to go wild, so to speak. There's kind of a method to it, and I really like that the film has the courage to tell a story that is uncomfortable, a story about mental illness, a story about isolation and anxiety and postpartum depression, sort of sensitive taboo subjects. But the film sort of runs in, you know, head first, if you will, jumps in feet first, and is unabashed in telling the story. And like I said, Lawrence is at the center of it, and she really does bring it all home. But it is the overall execution that I think will definitely leave audiences jarred. and it's left me conflicted. Just sort of reading the room after seeing the film, some people loved it, some people hated it. I think it's going to be a mixed bag, so to speak. And I think partially because it is a movie that you can't take literally. And what do I mean by that? It works in a non-linear structure. The scenes, in a lot of ways, are mosaics. They sort of work in an anecdotal expression. And it moves around a lot. Again, sort of representing the downward spiral into madness that Grace is... that is happening to Grace. But it's almost like a stem winder in a lot of ways, but the result is chaotic and unruly and volatile all at once. It's a movie where you sort of just have to, in a way, feel it. You can't think about it logically. You can't think about it on even an intellectual level. You sort of have to just react to it, because it's really a film about reaction. And in a lot of ways, I like that, because it is like poetry. It's not sweeping prose. It's not even done in a mechanical format. And that is something that I can definitely get behind from a creative standpoint. I think it's just the overall structure of it that I found to be a little jarring. And there are moments where the story sort of becomes repetitive. And I think that is by design, but it does make for a very trying and at times even exhausting experience. But this is a movie that I know I will have to revisit again, sort of piggybacking on my comments earlier about Weapons and Begonia. I'll be curious how I react to this film upon a second viewing, because I do think there is something there to this movie. And again, it starts with the incredible engrossing performance by Jennifer Lawrence, but it is ultimately the story itself. It is kind of a never-ending, you know, sort of like a spiral staircase, if you will, that has no beginning and it has no end. And, you know, again, you can read into that what you want, but this is a film that definitely is going to, it's going to divide audiences, but I think people are going to be talking about it. I'm certainly talking about it here, and I look forward to revisiting it and seeing where my feelings lie after a second viewing, because right now I can say it is like chaotic poetry held together by a mesmerizing performance by the always magnetic Jennifer Lawrence. But the overall film itself, the story, I have to mull on it a little bit. Right now, I would say it's at least a solid 3 out of 5, maybe almost a 3.5 out of 5. So we'll see what happens upon a second watch. But yeah, definitely it's a lot. I will say that. It is a lot of a film. But in some ways, those are always the best kind, because it makes you think and it leads to a great discussion afterwards. And that does it for me today, everybody. I want to thank you, as always, for tuning in to the show. As always, appreciate your support of the podcast. If you could give it a like, a 5-star rating on Apple helps a great deal with those pesky algorithms, as well as sharing it with any movie friends who you think would like to go on this cinematic journey with us. But on that note, everybody, go support your local theater, buy physical media, and yes, I'll be back next week where we'll do this all over again for the love of movies.